Welcome back to Shattering Miscues. My little bit of a late departure. We have Kirk with us now.
Good morning.
For those who may be, good morning, Kirk. For those who may be interested in the process of trying to resell a house that I thought was sold. You know, while we were on vacation, we had a buyer that put it in escrow, and he canceled yesterday. And so we're back preparing a house for sale, and we have an appointment immediately after this program. So I was, if you sound like I'm a little out of breath, I was running to get the home prepared for the prospective buyers. Ever been in a contract situation where one party said, you know, I know this is what I committed to do, but I'm not going to do it?
Oh, yeah. I've sold houses, bought houses. Oh, yeah.
You know, I've been in 120 escrows because I've built 20 homes. I've bought and sold another 20 homes. And I bought between boats and airplanes, 10 boats, 10 airplanes. And so there's an escrow on the buy and the sell on all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's 120 of them. Uh-huh. First time I've been in one where one of the two parties reneged on the deal.
Come on.
So, you know, it's I think it's germane just very tangentially to this program. Mm-hmm. In the sense that Yahweh established a deal with Abraham, with Yitzhak, with Jacob, with Israel, and with the rest of the world through them. Mm-hmm. And he has consistently honored the terms and conditions of his agreement and stood fast by the benefits for those who would accept the terms and conditions of that agreement. But throughout history, virtually all humans have reneged, disavowed, or wholly ignored, many opposed, the terms and conditions of that agreement. I mean, the purpose of Pauline Christianity is to disavow
right
that agreement and to besmirch its terms. And don't think for a moment that Paul's letters, which form half of the Christian New Testament, are anything other than a complete attack, a complete repudiation of the terms of the covenant. And that's the reason why they came up with their New Testament and their new covenant, because they didn't like the old one. And so Christianity is a wholesale rejection of the terms and conditions and of the covenant agreement itself.
Yeah, it was quite a revelation when you put it all together. You just go, it really is. There's no other reason for it to be there.
You know, we have, as Christians, we are fooled into believing that God authorized a New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fooled because a pastor will on occasion quote Jeremiah 31.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say that there's the establishment of a new covenant. But it doesn't say that, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No. It says renewed. Kadosh is the Hebrew word for to renew, to reaffirm, to reestablish. So he's reestablishing his covenant. He's not creating a new one.
No.
But in addition to that, the Christian church and Christianity is with Gentiles, is it not? We talked about at the beginning of this program, there almost all Christians are opposed to Jews and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the covenant in Jeremiah 31 say that the renewal and reaffirmation will be with?
Yehudim and Israel.
You are precisely accurate. Yehudim and Yisrael. That's who it says the reconciliation, the reaffirmation of the covenant will be with. Not Goyim. Most certainly not a church. And then it goes on to say that there will be one difference between the covenant as it was established with Abraham, with Yitzhak, with Jacob, and with Yisrael, and this reaffirmation of the covenant. Do you know what that one difference is? Only one difference.
Well, he's not going to put it in a drawer in a motel room. He's going to put it in your heart.
So. Correct. You're speaking of the Gideon Bible. The reality is that the only difference between the covenant as it exists now and the covenant when it will be renewed, it has not yet been renewed. It will be renewed. There is therefore no such thing as a renewed covenant or a new testament because it has not yet been renewed. This has not yet happened. It's going to happen in year 6000 Yah, 33 CE on our pagan calendars. That Yahweh is going to take his Torah specifically, his teaching, his guidance, and rather than making it available to us, which it is now, so that we can choose to observe it, we can choose to study it, we can choose to read it, we can choose to think about it as we're doing now, and we can go to it, he's going to put it inside of us. That's the only difference.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me, how can a religion that's based on a complete refutation of the Torah be akin to this renewal of the covenant when the covenant's renewal is predicated exclusively on the integration of the Torah into our lives?
You can't combine those two things.
No, you can't, can you?
No.
No, and that's the reason, by the way, that the covenant needs to be renewed is because in Hosea, Yahweh says that Israel violated it. They broke it. Yeah, just as, you know, the agreement that I had to purchase this house. It was violated. It was broken.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the nature of it. And so Yahweh says, okay, you broke the agreement. Now, an agreement which one party has rejected really no longer stands.
No.
One party can say, you know, I understand you rejected it. I'm going to leave the terms and conditions open for anyone who wants to accept it. But you as a group, you have rejected it. So it's no longer applicable to Yisrael and Yehudim because they rejected it. But for the rest of us, it's been held open. So that's the reason that Yahweh has to renew it and reaffirm it. He's got to put the offer back on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because they rejected it. And he will, and this time they're going to accept it.
Oh, yeah.
That's those that are left of them. You know, two-thirds of them will have died over this next 20 years. So, therefore, understanding what is in that Torah and responding to it before that time is a really good idea, particularly since this reaffirmation of the covenant and therefore salvation in this case is only being afforded to Yisrael and Yehudim. So if you're not an Israelite, if you're not an Israeli, if you're not a Yehudim Jewish, then you better pay attention to what we're saying because this offer is available to you now.
Yeah.
But the reaffirmation isn't for you.
That's pretty staggering, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, you don't have a lot of time. This hellish period on earth is called and known as the tribulation. It's the time of Jacob's troubles. It's going to begin in 11 years. Don't have much time.
No.
So you better make time for Yahweh. So Yahweh was explaining to Moshe what he was encouraging Moshe to tell Aaron and then for Aaron to say. And as you pointed out, Aaron wasn't providing the blessing. Aaron wasn't the motivation for the blessing. Aaron wasn't going to do anything but to tell the people what Yahweh was prepared and willing to do. And it's really important here, isn't it, to recognize that you've got Moshe, meaning the one who draws out, who gave us the Torah. It was recited through Moshe to us. The Moshe, whose name means to draw away from the crucible of Egypt, which is human oppression in all of its forms, was being asked by God, Yahweh, to encourage a man named Enlightened Free Will to speak to the people. So Moshe was the one who conveyed the written Torah to us. It was Aaron who spoke to the people about it.
Right.
That was the, if you look at the presentation in the Torah in Shemoth names in Exodus, when Moshe says, I don't want to do it because I stammer, that, you know, I have a thick tongue. Well, he said, then Aaron, your brother, he speaks well. He'll speak for you. So that was the arrangement that was made. So this is, Aaron is being asked to say what Yahweh once said so that the people can hear it in addition to read it. I would also, just before we go on this, the Jews will claim, religious Jews will claim, not ethnic Jews, but religious Jews will claim that there were two Torahs, one that is the one that we're reading from, and the other one was one that was given orally. Now, they claim the one that was given orally was given to the elders. When Yahweh was asking in the written Torah for Aaron to read this, is there anything in this that's inconsistent with, or even an addition to, or a contradiction of what's in the written Torah?
Well, not only is it not, but when Moshe told, you know, he closed his remarks with, and this is what he gave me. He didn't add a thing. He didn't subtract a thing. I mean, that's where we get the jot and the tittle quote again. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, he's very clear on this. This is it. There's no other option.
Right. And so Aaron was asked to bless Yisrael, the children of Yisrael, by conveying Yahweh's will, his desire, his intent, his promise, and his commitment. And that is where the blessing is. It's in the words of Yahweh, in his will, in his intent, and his promise. Listening to the commercial and talking about having your free radicals somehow incapacitated. I don't know if you caught the story, Kirk, but there's a report out now that cheap wine has three times higher levels of arsenic than are allowed in water. So what do you think the moral of that story is?
Well,
don't drink cheap wine.
People up where I live are thrilled, you know, the Lodi's and the, you know, the, all the wine people up there.
I don't know if you have a Trader Joe's near you, but Trader Joe's wine, which has been nicknamed Two Buck Chucks, you know, money isn't what it used to be. Yeah. It isn't Two Buck Chuck anymore. It's a five, six, and seven Buck Chuck. Charles Schwab was the foremost. And then there's a very popular wine that is sold in a lot of different retail outlets, but particularly in the warehouse clubs like Costco, that is a blend. It happens to be very tasty. It's called Ménage à Trois.
Oh, I've heard that one.
Yeah, and Ménage à Trois was the second highest tested. So the moral of the story is don't buy and drink cheap wine. All right, so we've got Yahweh telling Moshe to have Aaron, whose name means enlightened free will, bless the children of Israel, and which is kind of interesting that Christian churches read a corrupted version of this out of context, but it's obvious why they cite it out of context. If they cited it in context, everyone in the congregation said, well, why are you blessing Israel and the children of Israel? We're not the children of Israel. What about us? Well, you see, this is a blessing for the children of Israel, and the only way to become a child of Israel is to read the Torah and follow its directions.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the where we were in the discussion here, and it says that Yahweh wants to kneel down in love to continually bless you, desiring to lift you up forever for your benefit. And he has decided to actually and continually focus upon you. So those are the first two things that are expressions of Yahweh's will and desire.
Right.
They repudiate the religious notion that we get down on our knees to lift God up in praise.
Uh-huh.
They repudiate the notion that man should ever be on their knees before God. Now, it doesn't refute the notion that if you're an individual and you on occasion, and I do on occasion, want to say, you know, yeah, I am really appreciative that of what you've done on my behalf, on our behalf. What a marvelous plan. I really enjoy your tour guidance. This is fun spending time with you. To say those kind of things is the kind of things we would say to a father. We're not praising our father. We're not praising God per se. We're just expressing a genuine, heartfelt appreciation.
An admiration.
Yeah. And an admiration, a respect, an admiration, an appreciation. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
It's a natural and appropriate thing to do. But when you get into the religious kind of praise, oh, God, public declaration, I lift you up in praise. Rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not genuine, and it's phony, and
it's mostly show.
Right, it's mostly show, and the whole perspective here is that God is saying that he is desirous of and committed to getting down to lift us up. And that he is desirous of and committed to paying attention to us, being engaged and paying attention, thoughtful about us. And that's the opposite of the religious mantra that say, you need to put God first in your life, and you need to bow down and show your reverence for him, your devotion to him, your fear of him.
Well, according to this, he'll always be paying attention to you, so
right.
No reason to keep having to beg him like Christians do, and don't forget me.
Don't forget me, and save me, and tell me, tell me your will for my life.
Tell me your will.
I'm telling you my will. I mean, right here. There's a reason why God says
that doesn't agree with mine, so I want you to tell me one that agrees with me.
There's a reason that Yahweh says that the prayers of those who are not Torah observant are an abomination to him. Now, that sounds harsh to Christians, but that's the reality, Christian. Your prayer is an abomination to him. He's not listening to you. In fact, worse than not listening to you, he thinks that what you're doing is an abomination. The reason why is, as a father, if you were to tell your child over and over again that if you eat snails filled with snail poison out of the garden, they will hurt you. You will be sick and you may die if you do that. Don't do that. And if you eat these fine things that we're putting before you on the table, you'll be healthy. And if the child chooses to eat the snails and then says, hey, Dad, could you tell me what's good for me to eat? Tell me what you want me to eat. After he's done all of that, you look at it very poorly. In the Christian church, reading from their corrupted Bibles, they would then read, the Lord. In fact, they would say, may the Lord shine his light.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they would even say, may the Lord shine the light of his face upon you. But it doesn't say that, does it?
No.
It says Yahweh.
Yes.
You don't want, the Lord is light. Satan's light.
Oh, the Moloch.
Yeah. You don't want HaSatan to shine his light on you. He did with Muhammad. He did with Paul. And look at the result. You don't want to do that.
No.
So it's Yahweh. And Yahweh said he has chosen to always shine the light. And this is Or. It's the Hebrew word for light.
Right.
It is a transforming light, because this was written in the Hifl stem, where God is, the Hifl stem is slightly different than the Nifl. We talked about the Nifl and the Hifl. It sounds kind of funny talking about these words, but the Nifl and the Hifl.
Kind of a Danny Kaye routine, isn't
it? Right. The Nifl puts the speaker is putting the person he's speaking to into action, influencing them with the action of the verb. The Hifl is even more relational, because with the Hifl stem, the subject is causing the object to be like them, a second subject. So Yahweh wants to always shine the light of his presence upon us, means that he wants us to always reflect and have his light.
Right.
So he's making us like him.
Right.
That's what the Heifel Stem here says. That's a powerful concept, that God is making, wants to make us like Him so that we too are light. That is missed in all of the English translations because they ignore the purpose of the Heifel Stem.
I made charts of these the other day because get caught in this situation. And everything you're saying is right here on my chart, which is totally independent of this ain't made up stuff for those that are wondering whether these translations are accurate or not. That's exactly what the Heifel is.
Yes. So. Yeah, the Heifel Stem is the subject is engaging with the object. The subject is Yahweh. The object is the children of Yisrael. And with the Heifel Stem, Yahweh is causing the children of Yisrael to be transformed by the aspect of the verb, which is shining light, so that they become like Him.
Right. That's the only way to translate that, yeah.
That is correct. And all of that is missed. And may the Lord shine His light upon, the light of His face upon you.
Mm-hmm.
No. Pane, which is the Hebrew word for face, is also the Hebrew word for presence.
Yeah, His presence.
And, and what I have found is that that when you see pane in the Hebrew text, that maybe one time in 20, it can be translated face and not be ridiculous in the context of the sentence. And 19 times out of 20, it's presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh is constantly inviting us into His presence. He's not inviting us into His face,
no.
For example. And so you can be very comfortable as a translator rendering pene presence, and you have to be really careful when you render it face.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you share with us, though, I'm sure you know the three letters that comprise the Hebrew word for presence. What are they?
It starts with the P sound.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the P is it's your mouth, it's speaking,
right.
It's talking, nutritional, communicating language.
Right. So, again, we're dealing with the presence of Yahweh as represented by...
His word, again.
There you go. Boy, we have a common denominator here, don't we?
Boy, he says it so often, it's like, I know my students do say the same thing, because, you know, you're always saying the same thing, and I say, when are you going to stop? And I say, when you get it.
When you get it. Yeah, when you get it.
Then we'll move on.
Then we'll move on. But even then, when you get it, I might say the same thing again to reinforce it.
Just reinforce it, right.
Yeah, Yahweh's light is reflected in His words. If you want light, Yahweh's light inside of you, you're going to find it through His words.
Right.
And so we begin with mouth, which is where the words are formed, where they come out of us and of Him. So mouth.
But let me just also add that if indeed there are multiple dimensions beyond this, and maybe the seventh in His communication, then words, come on. Then if that is the ultimate dimension,
right.
And His words,
pay attention to it.
It would certainly appear, I would pay attention to this, exactly.
Right, I'd pay attention to this. What is the nun? The nun is such a fascinating letter.
The nun, of course, is the seed. It's an inheritance. We understand it as an inheritance of a generation or a heir, the continuation of families, because they're depicting
Have you ever seen a seed depicted with a squiggly tail going out to the side as opposed to a straight line going down?
No.
No. And the nun is it's got a round dot, if you will, and a squiggly line that goes out to the right side of the dot, horizontal to the dot, doesn't it?
Yeah, right out of your modern day textbooks.
Of a sperm. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not drawn. I know that if you go to the online sources, they'll say that it means seed, that it's drawn as a seed. No, it isn't. No seed ever looks like that. It's drawn as a sperm.
Mm-hmm.
It's drawn as a sperm 3,500 years before man knew what a sperm looked like. And it means child with an inheritance.
To be fair, you could still call it a seed.
Well, I mean,
what I'm saying is that a sperm is still a type of seed.
Of course.
But
you're extrapolating from the primary meaning.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem, by the way. You're correct, Scott, and that's a good point. That when you talk about casting your seed, the seed of life, it's sperm. And Yahweh uses zerah, the Hebrew word for seed, to talk about offspring and children. So there is a direct correlation here between these things. But it's important to know, nonetheless, that it wasn't drawn as a seed. It was drawn as a sperm.
No, and that's the beauty of it, is that it was, when you think about it in those terms, you say, wow, this is prophetic.
Yeah, I'm sure the original Israelis that heard this and read this would say, well, why is that seed going sideways? Why is the root of the seed going sideways, and why is it squeaky? That's not the way the roots look. But they say, we're told it means seed, so we're gonna go with that. But over time, we come to know. So it's a beautiful thing. All right, now, so you've got the seed, so it's the child with an inheritance. What is the next letter in presence?
Well, after that you have the hay, which is the obviously the little, it's a picture of a person standing up, ready to walk with their hands up to behold.
Mm-hmm.
It's a A-H sound or E-H sound. It's a person reaching up as male or female,
right.
To observe, to notice, to behold.
Right. Right.
Greatness, perhaps.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it's in Hebrew, the name of the letter means to pay attention, to look up and pay attention.
Well, say hey.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, that's right. That's funny. Yeah, hey means, pay attention. Look at me right now. Okay, pay attention. Hey, I want you to pay attention. PNH would mean that those who pay attention, who look to and engage with the words of Yahweh, become children with an inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, don't you get to reflect Yahweh's light?
Well, you would be like him.
Yeah, everybody exactly.
Would be like light.
Everybody. So the letters that comprise the word tell us exactly what's happening here. You've probably also analyzed or, the Hebrew word for light.
Yeah, it's it's got the Ain in the beginning. Now, this should have a...
By the way, there's two different ways that I've seen Or written. One is with the Ain and one was with the Alf. So, Alex,
yeah, originally I had it with the Aleph, and then I put the Ain because I found
right.
it more with the Ain than I did the other. But it's,
right. I like it better with the Ain than I like it with the Aleph. Both work, but let's just go with the Ain because I think it is more indicative, particularly in this context.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the Ain is a eye,
mm-hmm.
So observant. It's a
perspective.
Yeah, observing. Yeah, to know, perceive.
Right.
To
see. Right. So you could actually see. If you want to see a manifestation of Yahweh, you would use your eyes. If you want to see Him in His testimony, in His Torah, you would use your eyes to read it. Correct.
Right.
And you wanted the proper perspective to understand who Yahweh is and what He's offering and how we engage, the eye would be the way that you would convey perspective.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the second one after that is the wall, which is the tent peg, and we've covered that quite a lot, but it's to secure, to increase, to add. We use it in the connotation when we're talking about the family.
Mm-hmm.
Increasing the family, enlarging the temple right. for the family.
Now, I would ask you this question, and I know that you just love science as an art teacher. When you're transformed, because energy and matter are the same thing, they're just not the same amount of the same thing, do you increase when you go from matter to energy, which is light, or do you increase when you go from light, which is energy, to matter?
No, light would be the big number. And
that is correct.
Matter.
By the square of the speed of light, enormously larger. So what the tent peg does here, which says to increase, it's telling you the proper perspective is that when you go from material as you are now to the very light of Yahweh, you're going to be profoundly increased.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the wall mean in Hebrew?
And the wall is to increase.
To increase.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you like it when it all fits together?
Yeah, it's hard to find. You can't find flaws in this stuff when you
no. really take a I was once told, and this unfortunately was told by a Christian teacher, but the symbolism fits, that if you look at that which is of God, like the lily, the closer you look, the more beautiful you'll find it. But if you look at the things of man, like the head of a pen, the more closely you magnify it, the more likely you are to see flaws. And so, in the case of Yahweh's testimony, the more closely you examine the jots and tittles, the more beautiful it looks. And then we have the Rosh.
And then the Rosh, which is the face, the head, is one that's engaged, obviously, because we're talking about the something with senses, the eyes, the nose, I mean the eyes, the mouth, the ears, to hear, the eyes, to observe.
You're right. So if you observe the vision of Yahweh from the proper perspective, you're going to be increased like light. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Rob, who is called in from Michigan, who has a question on the Lord, on Hasatan Halal ben Shakar. Go ahead, Rob.
Hello, Craig and Kirk. I really appreciate what you guys have been doing the last few weeks. I mean, it's exactly what I need. I need to go over and over and over it just so it sinks in, because I have a learning disability, so it really helps me that you guys get so detailed into every letter and, you know, the representation of it, the picture.
You know, Rob, we all have a learning disability of one sort or another. I know I do. And my primary learning disability is the fact that I was brought up indoctrinated with a entirely different perspective than Yahweh is offering, and it takes a lot of work to shed it. And I'm a very methodical and slow translator, because I like to think about all the things that could possibly be being conveyed. But I will tell you, Rob, that my experience on, and I think this is probably Kirk's too,
yes, sir,
on repetition, is that I have never in my life gone through a passage a fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth time and not learned more on the last time through than I did on the first time through.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've been listening to the archives for the last 4 years, and it's just amazing on what's opened up in just 4 years, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Our understanding has grown immensely, unfortunately, because, you know, you, that's the whole purpose. You want to grow.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm sure we're going to be growing all the way up until the time, you know, we go on
yes.
with our Father.
And then even after that time, we're going to continue to grow, because you have to. That which doesn't grow dies. You know, the only way for us to be infinite is to continue to grow. So I expect that we will continue to learn and to grow and to gain an understanding and enjoyment for now until throughout eternity.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, I consider myself coming to know Yah through the back door, I would say, because I've had such a destructive life and abusive life, and, you know, I have a real learning disability. I'm dyslexic, so it's hard for me to read, and I'm ADD, yes, so it's hard to pay attention sometimes, but, you know, so this really, like I said, helps me out, you know, going into detail. I used to go through a whole class, and then the teacher, I'd ask her at the end, you know, what did you just say? And she'd have to explain it to me again.
Yeah, I have one son who struggles with ADHD, and I have another son that struggles with dysgraphia, which is the symbol version of dyslexia. It doesn't juxtapose letters, but it causes difficulty visualizing symbols. And both have done
at the same time.
It just takes a lot more effort and focus.
You really got to want
to do it. Both of them are very smart. They both overcome those learning disabilities, and neither of them are held back by them. But it does require more effort on their part than it does on the part of others.
Yeah,
I think that's probably a good thing, you know, because our efforts is always rewarded.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just a for sure statement is you don't have to be really intelligent to come to know Yah. You just got to want to know him. You know?
Right.
So,
right.
Regardless, you guys have been talking the last couple of days about the world and how it's become so evil. And I, you know, I listened to the first and second show. Actually was working two jobs and quit one just so I could study more. And I basically, I want to know, you know, what's Satan's, what's Hassan, the Satan, or, you know, Halab Ben Shikai, what's his role in this whole?
Yeah, I think he's going to be given greater leeway. I think right now, Halal bin Shakar has enormous restrictions put upon him. And I think that far too many people blame him for things that he has nothing to do with. But I think that those restrictions are going to be reduced, and I think he's going to be far more aggressive than he has been in the past. I think he's going to have one restriction remain, and that is he's not going to be able to mess with Yahweh's children.
Right.
So if you're a member of the covenant, he can't screw with you. And I think that's important. But he is going to be far more engaged on the human stage and within the lives of individuals, particularly the Torahless one, than at any time in human history, maybe with the exception of the Romans from the 1st through the 3rd century CE.
Right. Well, as I go back and study in the Torah and basically learn about it, I noticed that back then it seemed to be like it was more supernatural or something. I mean, you know, with Moshe basically leading, you know, splitting the Red Sea and holding his staff up. And even though I know what the purpose of it was, they still got bit. And there's some magical thing that happened to where they didn't die.
Yeah, I agree. There were, particularly through the Exodus, Yahweh was very demonstrable in their lives. And so there were many what we would call miracles at that time. We'll be back tomorrow.